How Curious is sponsored by the Oklahoma City Community Foundation.
Former First Lady Donna Nye has always had a passion for leveling the playing field for Oklahoma citizens who are developmentally disabled. A group of her closest friends decided to establish the Donna Nye Foundation in honor of the commitment and work she was doing in this area.
We've worked with the Nyes for so long that we really have a feel for their passion and their heart for giving.
If you care about causes that help citizens with developmental disabilities, join us. The Oklahoma City Community Foundation will help you make it happen.
Welcome to KGOU's How Curious show. I'm Rachel Hopkin.
It's called the X-59, and it could be this century's Concorde.
This ABC News report went out at the end of last month, October 2025.
Built to fly 925 miles per hour, the X-59 is designed to be the first aircraft to break the sound barrier quietly.
The idea of a quiet sonic boom is revelatory. The thunderous noise produced by supersonic aeroplanes hitherto has been a vexing issue for nearly eight decades, ever since Chuck Yeager showed it was possible to fly faster than sound.
And he does it, the first human to crack the sound barrier.
That's a sonic boom. It's an aural phenomenon which happens when something, usually an aeroplane, travels faster than sound, causing the sound waves produced by the moving object to smash together. Here's another one. Of course, the actual volume of any given sonic boom depends on multiple factors, including the height and speed of the jet, plus where you are in relation to it. In any case, the fact that we are not subjected to multiple sonic booms daily, courtesy of supersonic commercial passenger flights, is down, in large part, to the people of Oklahoma City. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Here's aviation historian Tom Weichel to set the scene.
So it really began in the military, and the military really pioneered supersonic travel. So in the late 1950s, there were already discussions about having some type of a commercial aircraft that would be capable of supersonic travel. And the British came together with the French and actually invited the Americans to participate. At the time, the U.S. declined because U.S. aircraft manufacturers wanted to be developing their own supersonic travels. It would allow someone to cross the Atlantic in just a few hours.
For example, the Concorde, which was the result of the British-French collaboration, could get from London to New York in around 3.5 hours, which is less than half of what a subsonic plane typically takes. But while the European engineers were making rapid progress on their vehicle, the US approach was more cautious, due in no small part to sonic booms. How would humans and animals react to them, not to mention buildings? That these factors were unknown so worried the invested parties that they determined large-scale testing was in order. Would people and structures be able to stand sonic booms?
The lead agency in sort of answering that question, that ended up falling to the Federal Aviation Agency. Now, this is a precursor to the Federal Aviation Administration. That's what the FAA is known as today. And it was led by a gentleman named Hallaby. He had been appointed by President Kennedy, and he volunteered to find a suitable place to kind of test this notion of what Americans would put up with. So they chose Oklahoma City for a couple of reasons. One, they believed the people in Oklahoma City would be somewhat predisposed to be favorable towards this whole project because of Tinker Air Force Base. So Tinker at the time, and even today, employs a huge number of folks. So they looked at Oklahoma City as a good possibility for that, but also because the city had houses of varying ages and styles, and also because it was very flat.
This city and community is one of the most air-minded, one of the most pioneering cities of the air age.
This is the voice of the aforementioned FAA Administrator Najib Hallaby speaking to an interviewer about the testing which was to take place over 6 months starting in February 1964.
Will the development of the supersonic transport continue no matter what the result of this controversy in the city?
I don't think anyone could say that. No, sir. I think this test is a crucially important one in the world's next phase of aeronautical development. If this city, with its air-mindedness, should say this noise is completely intolerable, then I would think the next phase of airplane development would be very significantly reconsidered.
So the testing here was really a big deal. Various efforts were made to ensure Oklahoma citizens knew what was going to be happening.
The FAA put out flyers and published in newspapers that the sonic boom testing would be happening. So they wanted people to know what they were so they wouldn't be too surprised. And they decided on 8 overflights per day.
The designated route was always the same and traveled in a northeasterly direction across the city, passing very close to Lake Hefner.
Typically what a pilot would do is they would take off in the morning and they would make a sonic boom, and then they would loiter for a little while and they'd come back and make another one. And they were on a very precise schedule, right down to the minute and the second. So people knew, they could almost set their watches. In fact, some businesses in Oklahoma City actually set their break schedule around when they heard the boom.
I was in the military at an Air Force base down at Big Spring, Texas.
This is Edward, or Ted Hopkins, with whom I spoke by phone. In 1964, he was a young airman early in his military career.
We had the fastest fighters in the world at that time. An F-104 Starfighter made by Lockheed would go twice the speed of sound. Our squadron sent me up as a junior pilot because all the other pilots got bored with just driving around through the skies over Oklahoma. And they left me up here to do all of them from then on. And so I had to fly 8 booms a day for FAA.
That's really funny that you left on your own. Did you mind?
No, because I got to flying. Every chance I got to fly was fun in those days.
Can you compare flying a supersonic plane to just a non-supersonic plane? Is it very different?
Yes, very. So when I would take off any time in the supersonic fighter, it was a single-seat fighter, only one cockpit, one pilot. So I was absolutely alone, and you feel alone. The moment you light the afterburner, now that means there's an explosion behind you, and that's when all the flame shoots out of the back of the jet. When that happens, there's an instant thrust forward. First thing you know, the airplane's up and off the ground and climbing into the clouds. And if you just leave it alone with the afterburner burning, the airplane I was flying would be going supersonic before it got to 3,000 feet going straight up. And that was a real kick, and I did that every chance I got. You cannot hear anything.
That's one of the strange things. Anyone in a supersonic jet cannot hear the sound it makes. On the ground, though, it's a different matter. According to Jan McLemore, who was 12 at the time, the ones to which OKC was subjected were
louder than anything, really startling at first. There'd always be that kid in class that would, you know, gasp loudly or scream or act like they had never heard it before when we were all warned and it was obvious what it was.
The sonic boom was more than just a sound.
This is Kim Elmore.
It was kind of a whole body experience.
Kim grew up in Tulsa, but remembers hearing the booms when visiting relatives in Oklahoma City. He would have been 8.
We could actually feel this thing go by, and it was extremely low frequency, kind of a whoomph sound. And I remember watching a large picture window in my aunt's house move in and out like a big membrane as this thing happened. Nothing in her house was damaged or broken to my knowledge.
Stefan Kovosh told me he was a precocious 6-year-old in early 1964 and was well aware of the testing.
And I was also aware of the politics at the time because we'd just come off of essentially World War II and the Korean conflict, and we were just getting into Indochina and nuclear testing and all kinds of crazy, frightening things were happening. So everybody was nervous anyway before they started testing.
Nonetheless, Stefan's curiosity had been piqued.
And I lived near the park, so I went out there every day because I wanted to see it. There were a lot of folks that did that.
And what was it like?
It was less frightening than I thought it was going to be. It was like a fireworks going, you know, one of the big boomy flat fireworks going off. But we were all a little bit disappointed because we thought there was going to be a visual part. And there just wasn't.
The supersonic jets were generally way too high to be visible.
And did it cause any damage to your house?
In my neighborhood, the The windows rattled, but I didn't see anything break.
Plenty of people, however, did feel the sonic booms cause myriad forms of damage, including to homes. One of the more alarming incidents was reported in the Oklahoma City Times in March of 64.
A six-month-old boy narrowly escaped harm Friday morning when the living room ceiling of his home fell in. The child's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Homer W. Thomas, said they blame the incident on the current series of sonic booms. Mrs. Thomas said that it was terrible and that she thought that the whole house was going to fall down.
Other complaints involve farm animals whose behavior apparently changed. For example, hens no longer laying eggs or cows that had stopped producing milk. Some of the grievances were on the more outlandish side. For example, one person said that the booms had caused their furniture to shrink, whilst another said they'd made their clock go backwards.
After the booms were over...
This is Tom Weichel again.
The FAA actually contracted with a private company to go and investigate the claims, because there were just so many. I mean, there were hundreds of complaints, and they couldn't really handle the volume. So they sent adjusters out to go and investigate, and the vast majority of claims that were made were dismissed. You know, some, I'm sure, rightfully, but there were probably some others that were dismissed that had merit.
Meanwhile, to ascertain the public's feelings about their reaction to the actual noise caused by the sonic booms, a few thousand people were interviewed several times over the study period.
And they compiled data showing the number of people that objected to the booms. And what was interesting, the boom intensity actually increased through the test. And they did notice a decline in the number of people who said that they accepted the booms.
By the end, around a quarter of the population felt that they could not learn to accept the ramifications of regular supersonic travel. Most Oklahoma Citians felt the booms were so loud that the jet producing them must be flying right over their homes. So one Sunday, Airman Ted Hopkins was detailed to fly purposefully low and slow to allow residents to see the actual flight path. It proved to be rather an eventful excursion in the light of the increasingly hostile feelings towards the testing.
When I got back, there was four people coming out to the aircraft. They came up. They said, "Are you all right? Are you all right?" And I said, "Sure, I'm all right. Is the airplane all right? Is the airplane?" I said, "I think so. It looks like it to me." They said, "Give it a pre-flight. Make sure the airplane's all right," because we had comments of people on the ground shooting at the airplane. So I went around the airplane and I said, "Well, look, I was going 200 knots. And anybody shooting, I doubt that they even came close. I was in absolutely no danger, but I enjoyed my combat over Oklahoma City."
Good. I'm glad nothing happened. And this was people shooting at the plane because they were so annoyed about the sonic boom noise?
Ma'am, I can't tell you. The city, not just the odd people, everybody that had a backyard and had a rifle was shooting. We were flying 8 times a day. A boom that sounded like a bomb in your backyard sounded like dynamite in your backyard 8 times a day until people just couldn't stand it anymore.
Of course, Ted is exaggerating, but although there were locals who were very staunchly in favor of supersonic travel, public opinion became so overwhelmingly against that eventually the Oklahoma City Council voted to ask the FAA to stop the tests early. This strong feeling anti was an instrumental factor in the U.S. later defunding the Supersonic Travel Initiative and also ensuring that sonic booms from whatever source remain a rarity in our skyways. Tom Weichel recently wrote an article about this whole affair for the Chronicles of Oklahoma Journal, and I liked the last couple of lines so much I asked him to read them for me.
"Today, the 1964 sonic boom test is an event remembered by longtime residents of the Oklahoma City area. We should be thankful for the sacrifices they made. By serving as test subjects for 6 months, residents of Oklahoma City and surrounding communities helped save tens of millions of fellow Americans from a future shaped by an endless succession of annoying booms." So I might add to that that that's my opinion. And I'm usually not, when I write a historical article, I don't generally do that, but I really believe that this is true. That Oklahoma City residents who were treated like guinea pigs really did us a huge favor. As a pilot myself, I'm not against progress and innovation, but I also really believe that our environment is very important, and I think part of that is our sound environment.
Thanks to Tom Weichel and all of the contributors to today's episode, including news host Nick Daniels. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. The managing editor is Logan Layden. David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. As ever, if you have an idea for a future episode, please drop us a line at curious@kgou.org.
Sources and Methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.